It's like I cut off half your body, maps anywhere's half off.
Wow.
That's a pretty good.
I just came up with that.
That is definitely.
Is that going to work?
That probably wouldn't work.
Yeah.
That song, do it again.
Try it again.
Ready, go.
Go.
It's like I just cut off half of my body, maps anywhere half off.
Dang.
That is pretty good, actually.
So this month, Maps Anywhere, that's the only Maps program that is programmed without exercise equipment. You can do this anywhere, is half off. The price is cut in half. Or
get it for free.
Or you can get it for free if you enroll in the RGB bundle, which
holy shit, it can be free.
9 months of exercise programming. So if you get the RGB bundle, Maps Anywhere for free, you literally will have all the maps.
Where do you go?
You have all the maps. Go to mindpumpmedia.com.
I'm coming.
Hurry up, Justin. Turn around. Every now and then
I get a little bit closer. And don't know the words.
Yeah.
Turn around.
Reach around.
Right now.
My thighs. Hey, yeah. Hey, Doug.
Hey,
Douglas. What's up, man?
What are we doing, Douglas?
We're just singing.
Yeah.
Are we giving away more t-shirts?
We are.
All right, let's do it.
We do that every week. We love doing it.
How many reviews did we get?
We got 15 nice reviews.
15 reviews.
Holidays, because it's a little bit slow right now. So I'm going to encourage everybody to step it up a bit.
Ooh, that's a challenge. You know
why? Don't piss off.
Santa Claus would be very happy if you do that.
That's right.
You might get it. He might send you a shirt.
Yes.
Yeah, a shirt instead of coal.
Name them off.
All right. We got 4 shirts going out. We got Jackson Leonard, Shane S.
Jackson Leonard.
Aaron Stephen or Steven. Freddie Ma Joe. All of you are winners. Send your name, the one I just read, to iTunes at mindpumpmedia.com, your shirt size, your shipping address, and we'll get that right out to you.
By the way, if you want to leave a review, this is what you do. Get on your podcast app. Go to the search function. You have to do this even if you're already subscribed to Mind Pump.
It's a purple button.
Even if you're subscribed, click on search, type Mind Pump in the search function. When our icon pops up, click on our icon. Then there'll be a little button that says reviews up near the top.
Do it, man.
If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
You know what I just realized the other day? So my son,
believe us,
my son's 11. How old's your oldest, Justin?
6.
Okay. My son's 11. In a very short period of time, he's going to figure out how to find my podcast, and he's going to hear you joking about cocaine all the time, Adam.
No, we have an explicit. He has to be
because
18.
I don't make those jokes.
They're not allowed to listen.
He has to be 18.
I've just decided
it's on the internet, dude.
I don't care. It's not they're
gonna
for
look,
them.
Dude, at some point, they're going to see fucking donkey porn and weird shit because it's there.
Yeah, but that's that, you know.
He's all, that's cool.
That's
though.
Their weird friend that's like, hey, man.
By the time those guys out. Are, by the time your kids are 18, shit's going to be way weirder.
It's not going to be 18. It'll be next year. He's 12, dude.
This show will.
He's going to be 12.
Yeah, but it's explicit. You have to be 18 or older to have it.
You don't anybody can download.
You don't put all the blocks on your phone?
On my phone?
Yeah.
There's no blocks.
Yes, you have all the iPhone allows you to have all this stuff, or if there's certain things where you're over
18. Do you really think that you're smarter than the average 12-year-old when it comes to fucking technology?
Not at all.
Yeah.
Not even going to try and battle that kid.
Not even. He will get on there and he'll probably block me.
What's that mean?
From seeing what he's looking at.
That would be pretty funny, right?
You know what my favorite thing is today? Adam talking about how it's not cold in here, because by the way, our heater is not working for whatever reason, so it's blistering cold. I know blistering is used to define heat, but it's that fucking cold.
That adjective.
It's freezing. Okay. And Adam's like, it's not fucking cold.
You're such a
meanwhile,
pussy.
Meanwhile, I mean, he's literally wearing, maybe. He's literally wearing, I'm not exaggerating, a hat designed for the North Pole.
He is.
It's a fucking hat designed by...
It's very furry around the ears.
In fact, it's the hat that Santa Claus wears because he lives in a massive igloo. Yeah. Mansion. He's like, it's not cold.
Igloo mansion.
It's not cold. He's got a fucking fur.
And he's got a beard.
Hat on. Big ass beard.
He's
a sweater.
He's the buff Santa.
And he's very hairy chested.
Is Santa supposed to be in a igloo? That's what he's in?
It's a massive. You never seen the cartoon?
A big wood where all the little elves are running around in a woodworking shop.
It's like, cozy in there. He's not freezing his balls off.
You can't. They're doing heavy machinery and cutting toys, and so you can't be in an igloo. it would melt.
I don't know, dude.
Yeah,
I'm gonna look it up right now.
Santa's house is not.
I'm gonna look it up right now.
Dude, this is reality, dude. Santa lives in a fucking house.
I'm googling it right now. So because you know this, glue. Yeah. Because this is gonna.
Yeah, Google Santa's house.
Trying to redefine my archetype of Santa Claus again. Huh?
Well, I mean, it ranges from wooden houses, like what Adam's saying.
I'm pretty much true.
To yeah, I guess I like it's a, Father I guess Christmas it's a wooden house.
Anyway.
Yeah. I guess you're right.
No igloos, huh?
Father Christmas was like, he just like drags like trees behind him. What's his story?
Who?
Father Christmas.
Who's Father Christmas?
He's like, you know, he's from like Germany or something.
Are you making things up again, Justin?
I'm not, man.
We
it's
talked
true.
About this.
It's a real thing.
Santa isn't worldwide.
There's Father Christmas.
Santa
That's
is
a whole nother guy.
Santa's not worldwide?
I think.
No, dude, we made that shit up.
I think Santa is.
America did?
No. Yeah. No.
Yeah,
no, St. Nicholas was a
no,
real
I have
thing.
No, I have friends in Europe that get presents from Santa Claus.
Santa Claus is basically a European.
It's Father Christmas.
The European thing, and so that's why it came to America. In Italy, we have, I don't remember her name, shit. The day after Christmas, the Good Witch comes and gives you more presents.
What?
Yeah, I can't
what
remember
kind of
her name.
Satanist shit is
the Good
on
Witch,
here.
I got to find this out. God damn it, what's her name? Italian...
The Good Witch brings presents after. Now,
the
does
fairy witch.
Now do you, over there? Do you guys get Santa and then you get the Good Witch, or is
you
it just the good witch?
No, you get Befana, La Befana. Her name is
Befana. So you get Santa and Befana,
and you get Befana.
She
you
comes
do.
And she sprinkles some meatballs
in
on
Italian,
the tree.
In Italian folklore, Befana is an old woman who delivers gifts to children throughout Italy on Epiphany Eve. Mm. This is the night of January 5th, so it's like after Christmas, right? Yeah, so I think Italian children, because Italian children are crafty, I think they invented this to get more presents.
It sounds about right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It does sound
those
right.
Those little crafty
we don't get snow,
shits.
But we get a lot of Parmesan.
She's usually an old lady riding a broomstick, and she's wearing a black shawl, and she's covered in soot because she comes in through the chimney. She's just a copycat.
Well.
She's just copying the original.
I see.
You know what I mean?
So
I'm going to give you guys a Befana gift.
Your boys.
It's gonna, I don't know what that's going to be.
It's going to be like a ravioli or something.
Yeah.
All right. So your boys won't be listening to this. So what do you guys, did you already go Christmas shopping yet? Or do you plan to? What's on the list?
Yeah.
What are you getting them?
Amazon, dude.
So I actually bought that Block Souls thing that you were telling me about.
Yes.
So it's this, it's like this toy, I don't know, that you put together. There's like this, it's like a board that you put, you connect all these blocks together and then you take pictures of it, and there's this app. And so you basically make levels and characters for a video
it's
game.
It's like a grid so that, yeah, you yeah. put like.
I sound like such an idiot, like such an old timey guy, you know?
Like, no, and
you
then get you these, put this thingy and you take a picture.
It's these tubes that you connect to make an internet.
And then magic, presto.
Yeah.
It's called what? What's it called?
Bloxel.
It's really cool.
Like, it looks cool.
Well, no, my brother, you know, he's. Yeah, I guess you wouldn't call it cool. It's kind of geeky, but my brother got like that for his birthday. I gave him that for his birthday because we're both really into video games and stuff. And so
wait, you gave your grown-up adult male
adult
brother?
2 years older than me, brother.
Oh wow. Did he like it?
He loves it.
I'm confused. So you gave your brother the same gift you're giving your 12-year-old son?
Yeah. 11-year-old.
And I'm giving it to my oldest.
So what? I don't get it. What? How's
you, because anybody you can make can your own it. Video games.
You make your own video games, Adam.
It's sick.
Adam, you can make
your
own
video
games.
You know what it reminds me of? You remember what it was like? That was, and I was just playing this the other day. It was Excitebike for Nintendo.
Yeah, even better than that is Mario Builder.
Oh.
Which is
fucking
he has that, but this is another level because you can like make your own apps like in a sense, but like it's really simple.
You know what I
came in today and I noticed that Off Road was on. Is that because Doug was here last night, fucking getting all good at the video games?
No, I turned it on.
Oh, you did?
I was
like, this motherfucker, he doesn't want to get his ass whooped at NBA Jam.
You know, have the ultimate high score forever. He'll never touch it.
Let me tell you my experience with this. So Adam is like, hey, I got a surprise, like he always does. Which usually means he wants to buy something and use mind pump funds without approval.
That is not true.
So he goes off and he spends thousands of dollars on arcade games and brings them into the gym. Now, normally, I want to be angry. I want to be like, listen,
I know.
You can't just fucking spend money and not tell us, dude. but I liked them so much.
Guys, I got a Ski-Doo.
So I'm like, fuck.
Like, what the
I
fuck?
I can't say anything.
Awesome.
It looks so good in the gym. It's so great.
I've always wanted a Wave Runner.
So now he's been, his pattern of just taking our money and spending it on shit for the gym is a bit emboldened now because he's gotten
it's brought in character to the place.
But so far, he's made great decisions.
Well, and guess what we should have in two more days, and we should have our
hot tub,
our Chimera Nitro Brew should be rocking and rolling.
Oh my god!
Pretty excited for that.
It's cold brewed, infused with nitrogen, which is going to make it creamy and delicious.
So you get all the benefits of the nootropics and the creamy blend of the cold brew nitro.
Creamy is a gross word.
Yeah, it is, especially when you say it like that. Then you do that.
You know what I did? I put my fingers apart like this.
Oh, dude!
Cold brew,
dude.
I want to bring you guys a cup of coffee. Be like, I made it extra creamy for you.
Oh, man.
You guys,
tell me that doesn't taste good.
Well,
though.
So
I infused it with creaminess.
I'm really excited to try the Chimera because I definitely know. First of all, there's only so many of these unless you live in Seattle. Because I know in Seattle,
it's hard to find nitrogen infused coffee.
Yeah, so it's hard to find that already. And then the fact that we've got Chimera coming with nootropics infused in it is. I'm really curious to see the taste, the feel, everything of this. So
cold brewing. Wait. Number one, cold brewing coffee. Because the brewing process takes longer, you get more caffeine in the coffee, so it's stronger. People don't realize that.
The flavor is richer. It's stronger.
The acidity down a little
bit. Yeah, it brings down the acidity, so the taste is better. And then when you infuse it with the nitrogen, it gives it that mouthfeel. So if you've ever had
beer
on tap where they do that, it's fucking amazing. Mm. It's really, really good. So I can't wait to try it.
It's a total treat. I've never been a black coffee drinker until cold brew nitrogen.
How did you always drink your coffee?
Like a cream and sugar type, you know, just a little
bit. There he goes again. Creamy. No, for reals, you put milk and sugar every time?
Cream.
Like half and half. I use half and half or a heavy whipping cream.
Mm.
Yeah.
I've always had coffee black, but now that in the morning I blend mine with the butter and the MCT oil, and I just fucking love that.
Yeah, well, that's kind of how I've survived now because it's a much better choice than putting some of all the.
Do you guys wake up in the morning and do that every morning?
No, I just drink it black in the morning.
You don't do nothing else?
No, I don't want to put effort in it. It's too early.
No, why'd you sound angry?
I throw shit on and I'm just like, nah.
He sounded
not a morning person.
He sounded pissed off about that.
I don't like
angry about getting up every day.
I think that's true.
Give me my damn coffee.
We've spent enough time together now that it is true. You do wake up kind of irritated.
I do.
In the morning.
Absolutely.
A little bit angry.
I completely admit it.
I always wake up happy. I don't know about Adam's in the middle.
Well, you're so
I think
fucking
it depends.
Cool.
I think it depends who Adam's exposed to first. If he wakes up next to Justin, he's pissed off. If he wakes up next to me, he's happy. Yeah.
Wait, like literally next to you?
Yeah, but he's happy at night. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, God. Dude. Where are we going with this? Where are we going? Yeah. Dear, yeah. Dear God.
That got weird.
Please, God, Eagle, save us.
That cold brew Eagle.
Queen Quas.
The Eagle has landed.
Chimera Quas.
Today's Quas being brought to you by Chimera Coffee. It's the only coffee that is infused with all natural nootropics for a cleaner, calmer, and more focused buzz without the crash. Click the Chimera link at mindpumpmedia.com and input the discount code MINDPUMP at checkout for 10% off.
It's the motherfucking Quas.
The Eagle has landed.
Quee Qua.
Our first question is from Jay Cisneros. Who is each of your biggest influences in life and how did they help you?
Wow.
Yeah. I have never had a major influence in my life.
Go ahead and say it.
Until
me,
I met
go
Adam.
Ahead, go ahead, say,
Adam really changed my life. Because
go ahead and say it.
I didn't realize you could be as cocky as he is and get away with it. That's not true.
He's the
that's
source of my influence.
That's not true because you worked with Larry. And we both worked. Larry is the biggest, cockiest motherfucker I've ever met in my life. And he's the only man I've ever met that you still love him. Like, normally when someone's cocky and arrogant, it just fucking rubs you the wrong way. But there are some people that have this
ability to do that.
Yeah, it's to me, it's the ultimate level of swag. If you can be cocky and people and not annoy people.
People still like you.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. But and
that
I think
is a talent.
What that I think you have to be kind of a badass though. You know what I'm saying? You have to be able to like if you're cocky, like if like Stephen Curry has like swag and he can like the motherfucker is one of the best all time. So he can be that way, right? But you can't just be like
Conor McGregor.
Exactly. Conor McGregor, when he comes off all super arrogant, it's fucking funny. Yeah, it's awesome.
You love the guy.
Yeah, you love him. So Larry was a guy like that. We both had a chance to work with
him. Yeah, and I knew him personally, and I also knew he was, at the same time, he's also humble. He had that interesting combination.
Hmm.
So my first biggest influence in my life was definitely my parents, 100%. Two of the biggest things that I took from my parents were, because they're both very, very hardworking, both have incredible integrity. In fact, my mom wouldn't lie to the point where she wouldn't answer a question if she knew she had to lie to to protect your feelings or whatever. She would avoid the question. So the integrity was incredible, and their work ethic was incredible. I mean, my parents never complained about working hard. My dad worked 7 days a week for most of my life. My mom never stopped working. She had a job later on in life, but she also did, she did all the stuff around the house and stuff for the school. And so I learned those two things from my parents to the point where I didn't realize I had learned them. It had just become a part of my fabric because that's what I was exposed to. So it wasn't like they sat down and taught me, those kinds of things. It was just through observing how they were, all the time with us. And so my parents, definitely my biggest influences. Later on, I got into the fitness industry very, very young. I was 18. As soon as I could get a job in a gym, I got my job in the gym and became a personal trainer. And shortly after I started working in a gym, the general manager of the club changed. So within about 3-4 months, I was managing the fitness department. And then came in a new general manager, and it was my very, very good friend, who's now my good friend, Don Cardona. But at the time, obviously, I didn't know him. And he was this young, aggressive, kind of individual who had this charisma about him, and he was an incredible leader. And immediately, me and him became, close. He recognized my work ethic and my talent, and I, loved how straightforward he was, and how he had incredible integrity as well with his staff. And we became very, very close, and he was able to challenge me and push me in ways that worked very well for me, but I also challenged and pushed him. And, he became a very, very strong influence in how I became a leader amongst people that, that eventually when I became a manager, my style mimicked his quite a bit later on. Then beyond after that, I worked with other, other great leaders, and I'd learned from them as well. And I didn't really have a huge influence after that until much, much later. And it's when I left working for corporate fitness and started my own business. And I started my own wellness facility. I believe I was 22 when I opened my wellness gym. And shortly after that, I had, because I had kind of the way I ran my facility is people could rent space for me, rent offices and run their business. But I also wanted everything to be cohesive and work together. I didn't just want anybody in my gym. I wanted people who would contribute positively to the members that would come into my facility. And the two of the first people that came on board, one was a physical therapist and one was a massage therapist. But they were both very holistic in their approach, and they were both esoteric. The massage therapist was extremely esoteric. Now, you got to understand, at that time, when these people came on board, I was atheist. Like, I had become hardcore atheist. I was very science-based, and it was all about, lifting weights, doing cardio, macros, and that was pretty much it. Everything else was pseudoscience or the esoteric stuff about the way you feel and your emotions and, all this other stuff. And meditation was all woo-woo bullshit to me, and I don't want to hear it. But these people came on board, and I respected them enough to let them do that themselves. I personally didn't right away absorb it or really acknowledge it, but I respected them as people, and I respected their practice, and I let them do their thing. And so the massage therapist would put like crystals in the gym, and she'd sage the club with freaking, she'd light sage and fucking put smoke all over the place. And
I laugh because this shit happens in my household.
Yeah, I know. Your girlfriend is like that. The physical therapist would, you know, people would come in and complain about pain, and, you know, she was a physical therapist, so she understood correctional exercise on a level way beyond me. But then she also would say things like, well, how stressed are you? And, you know, your pain may be coming from this emotional situation that happened. I'd listen to her, and at first I'd roll my eyes. But, you know, because I respected her so much, I would kind of pay attention. And fast forward, I don't know, maybe 2 years into our relationship of working together, and I'm starting to adopt some of the things that they're saying because I'm starting to see some of the benefits, and I'm always trying to be open-minded, you know what I mean? So I'll listen even though I'll disagree. But I start to see some of the evidence, both anecdotally and also from doing my own research of some of the stuff they're saying. And then, boom, my body turned on me in a big way, and I had severe autoimmune issue just came up, and I thought maybe I would have something like Crohn's or whatever, my digestive system,
or
just
cancer. Anytime something happens to Sal, he's almost
well you know. What you joke about that, but I'm going to be honest with you, those paranoias happened after this. Before
that's
that
it all started.
That's what it started, because my body turned on me in a big fucking way. Like, you're looking at someone who at the time thought he understood health and fitness, right? And I ate, you know, chicken and rice and my vegetables, and I worked out and whatever, and boom, all of a sudden I'm losing 10, 12, 15 pounds. Everything, I just had, you know, severe digestive issues, energy was horrible, I was pale, you know, my performance in the gym was, there's nothing I could do to stop it, nothing that I knew to do to stop it. I thought I was doing everything right. Went to the doctor, of course they, you know, couldn't do anything for me. Couldn't identify any parasites or bacterial anything. And so I could not for the life of me understand what was going on. And because I was in such a vulnerable position, I became much more open-minded to some of the stuff they were talking about. And I did a food intolerance test. They call them Pinner tests, which are arguably mainstream medicine doesn't necessarily accept them, but there is some science to support them. I was at a point where I'm like, I'm just going to fucking try it, because I had seen them work with other people and how well they had worked out. So I took a Pinner test, and boom, came back gluten intolerance and certain nuts I had to avoid, and egg whites. And, you know, my body was in this kind of hyper immune state. I took all those foods out, started listening to what they were saying, started slowly eliminating supplements, and my body started getting better, and I started feeling healing myself. And this is when I started to adopt my current philosophy of wellness, and which is still evolving. It's still taking me down that path. And those two young ladies, I don't work with them anymore. And of course, I started, you know, having them teach me how to meditate. I started looking at yoga. I started understanding, wellness on a completely different level. They, by the way, it wasn't a one-sided relationship. I influenced them when it came to resistance training. Both of them had zero really understanding of real strength training and the benefits of that on wellness. And they started deadlifting and squatting and doing all these different things. And so we were big influences on each other. And that was my last, I guess, huge, great influence, aside from working with you gentlemen and doing Mind Pump and, us continuing to evolve, kind of our philosophies on things. So, you know, that's it.
That's quite a bit, right there.
Yeah, it's a lot. I mean, yeah. I want to acknowledge these people.
No, I thought that, you know, and you actually, I'm glad you went first, because you sparked some things in me. I right away, I have, you know, somebody that always comes to mind when a question like this comes out. But you said something that I think is important to talk about, that I probably wouldn't have shared unless I listened to you talk about your parents first. And I think when we think of like heavy influencers in our life, in a question like this, right away we go to all these people that have had this great positive influence that really, you know, drove us in this direction to personal growth or elevating who we are. And, you know, I would have to thank my parents, my mother, my real father, and my stepfather for this, because they were major influencers. Now, the difference is the heavy influence was a part of a lot of what I do is very opposite or different of how I was raised. And, you know, I've talked a little bit on the show before about, you know, my dad committing suicide when I was 7, my mom married into an abusive relationship after that. And we were all, we moved all over the place because we were, you know, either getting evicted from a house. I've seen our houses foreclosed on. So I had a pretty rough upbringing, but that's also what made me, you know. And it's you, and I, you know, Tony Robbins talks about, you know, people that like struggle with, you know, this, these issues from childhood, and we don't thank our parents. You know, those people that go through that, they hold on to that, and they are angry or bitter, upset over it, where I have a different view on that. Like, I thank my family for putting me through that, because I really think that it developed my character at a very young age. I was the oldest of five, so I was forced to be kind of the leader of the family. I saw a lot of the things that they did wrong, and I knew that, like, as I got older, like, these were priorities in my life, and I didn't want to do this, and I didn't want to do that, and I want to make sure I did this. And a lot of that was because I went through the struggles. And I think it's hard for people sometimes to learn how to take situations like that and to allow it to influence you, but influence you in the right direction, instead of letting it bring you down or negative, or, you know, feel sorry for yourself. Instead, I used it the same way Sal used it, only I was looking at it like, okay, these are the don'ts. You know, don't do this, don't do that. If otherwise, I could head down this way. So obviously, that was a huge influence very early on. So I had that. I was out on my own by 17 years old, and I was paying for college and working at the same time. And so that matured me really early. And because of that, you know, and they typically say, like, you know, men are always like, what, 5 years or so behind women when it comes to maturity. I think I was a rare case. I don't think that was the case at all, which is probably why I always dated older women than me, because I had to mature at a very young age, which I think helped accelerate me, you know. I don't think I would have bought my house at 21 years old had I not gone through this whole process. So that was probably the original influencers to set me off on my path to where I am at today. And then probably the next person who I would say really, really changed my life was my buddy Mark Baker. And also, like Sal, this is where, you know, him and I have so many similarities, is I was the fitness manager, or the head trainer, just like he's talking about, the lead, running a club. And just like he was saying, I had another GM, and I had him for a couple months, and month three comes around and I get a new guy, and I've never met this guy before. He comes in, and I think Mark at that time was about 26 years old or so, and I'm 21. So he's got a few years on me, and he comes in, and the first like encounter that we have, we really don't really talk very much. He just gets in, and he gets fucking right to work. And at that moment, or that time, I had never seen somebody so focused, so driven, work so hard. And we never really talked. And at first, it kind of irritated me. Like, it bothered me that he didn't give me the time of day. Like, and at that time, I was kind of the man of the club. Like, I was setting the records and sales, and I was the man there. And then here comes this new guy, and he doesn't even stop for more than a couple minutes to talk to me, because he's just on the go. He's busy, bam, 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 everywhere going. And I'm like, who the fuck is this guy? Like, who do you think you are, type of deal, right? So that was kind of how we started off. And as I got to know who he was, I was so impressed with his leadership ability, his emotional intelligence. And he's really the one who taught me all that, and really taught me to learn how to reflect and look inward on everything that's happening to us. So every time something happens to us, so quick are we to blame others or look at everything else that, you know, is causing this in our life, instead of internally looking at, you know, what can I have done differently, or what part of this do I own? And then also understanding, like, desired outcomes. So he was the first person to plant that seed with me. And I was the best man at his wedding. And I remember I told this story my speech for him, and I literally broke down crying telling this story, because it was such a powerful moment for me, because I'd already seen and I was already getting influenced by his leadership in front of me, and his work ethic and the things that he was teaching me about being a better person and desired outcome. And it was really pushing me and elevating me to a whole nother level that I didn't even know if I was capable of. And I'll never forget the day that he was transferred out of that location. And he'd only been there for about 1 year. And because you know how it used to work in our company, especially if you're very successful, they move you around. Yeah, they move you around. You know, if you kill it in a location, especially if you break records and you do great things, which we did while we were there, they're sending you off to the next place to fix, basically. Mm-hmm. So, and that's what happened to Mark. Mark came in, he just totally flipped the club upside down. We set and broke all kinds of records and did great things. I learned a ton from him. We became the best of friends while that was happening. And then the night came when he was telling people that they were going to be transferring him up to the Mountain View location. And at that time, remember, I had worked there before, so I actually knew the staff even better than he did. And some of these guys were like, you know, like the Jay Subias, who had been in the company since the beginning of time. You know, they'd been there for 10 plus years and old guys. So we're sitting in a room of about 10 guys, and you've got everything from about 18 years old all the way up into their mid-50s of men that are sitting in the room. And when Mark went around and he tells everybody that he's going to be transferring to Mountain View, it was like, God, he gets me emotional just thinking about this moment, because it was such a powerful moment. The entire room just goes dead silent. And I'm like sitting there and I'm like, God, well, this is, you know, and I knew he had told me, I'm like his best friend. I knew he was going to Mountain, and I was excited for him because he's getting promoted. But the rest of these men that looked up to him as the leader of their facility, everyone was quiet. And you could tell, like, I'm looking at their faces, and some people look like they're kind of mad and angry, and other people are kind of sad and don't know how to react. And then one of them stands up, dude, and he walks over, and he just hugs him. And then he just starts bawling, dude, just bawling, crying. And then one guy after another, bawling, crying. And the next thing you know, you look around, and I'm crying. It's like 10 grown-ass men are sitting in this room, and everybody is just crying. And you're like, holy shit. That was one of the most powerful moments that I'd ever been around somebody where somebody had impacted their feelings that much, and his leadership was just insane. And like after that, I was like forever in love with trying to reach that level. I was like, man, I want to be at a level where people cry because I'm leaving. And he wasn't even leaving. He's going to Mountain View. He's only going up the road 45 minutes. Not like he's moving to another country or saying, I'm never going to talk to you guys anymore. But that's how powerful of a leader he was, that these grown-ass men that have only known him for 1 year were breaking down in tears because he was now moving on. Mm. So for sure, most influential person that has ever played in a role. And then just like Sal said, man, since then, like the relationship that the four of us have in here, like it couldn't be more perfect of a timing where we all are at in our journey in fitness and in business to get all of us together. I feel every day that I leave this facility, a part of me grows, whether it be spiritually, emotionally, physically, intellectually. Like I'm growing every single day when I'm in a place like this. And I think this is another Tony Robbins thing, or I can't remember where. I remember listening to this one time about, you know, as you're like in search your whole life of like the most ultimate platform where you can just continue to grow and flourish. And I believe that we have found that in this place with the four of us, is that everybody is pushing each other to grow and go to the next level. So I would say that's probably the third most influential situation or people that have been in my life for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is kind of a tough question for me, just because listening to you guys, you have very specific people that you can identify as like those one, like I could say like this guy, you know, or this girl, or this lady. And, you know, for me, it's just been this process, this journey of growth. And obviously, like kind of Sal mentioned in the beginning, like my parents had a huge influence on me, and mainly to establish like my moral compass and really grounding me as far as, you know, what kind of character that I have and the integrity. And, you know, my dad was very, very influential with that and challenged me all the time and tried to make sure that, you know, that was something that is a big priority in my life. And so, you know, that was like his major thing coming back from Vietnam and everything, was to make sure, you know, there was a spiritual side to me and our family, and that we really paid attention to how we treat people and, you know, how important family is and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, that was a huge, huge part of who I am. And then going from there, It's like this self-discovery for me. I had to like challenge myself, and then I had to like break out and kind of find out who I am. And so I personally went out, and I guess I could identify like my ex-girlfriend because she kind of prompted me to get the hell out of Dodge. and I went to Chicago to kind of find out who I was, and I didn't know anybody out there, you know? And that was like a really hard, you know, time that I had to like experience. I had to figure it out. And, you know, I've had a lot of authoritative type characters in my life, like coaches and, you know, teachers, but I can't really pinpoint them being that person that was like, oh, that was the fire. That was the motivator that drove me to, you know, I just kept internalizing, you know, trying to self-reflect, like, you know, what do I really think about this? And like, I don't know, I guess I've always been really dismissive of like motivational type characters or like people that like project this kind of, I don't know, like this has a lot of charisma, and I'm always like, well, you know, why? Who are you to tell me these types of things?
You're very suspicious of that.
Yeah, very skeptical, yeah. And there was a lot of great. I mean, man, my coach in high school was super motivational, and he was like amazing. And I know he influenced me, but I didn't like get, you know, any further with that. It was like that was my time period. It's like a little time capsule of him influencing me then. And then the next phase where I'm like in college and I meet like a couple of people I've never met before. One of them, actually Ben, who lived in Morgan Hill, was a big influence in my life because he checked me all the time and was like, you know, kind of challenging me as to why I made certain decisions that I made. And like, you know, why, like when I'm like blackout drunk and he tells me like, you know, what was the thinking behind that? You know, why did you do that? And all of a sudden I'm like, it sucked. You realize, you know, you can get to a place where, you know, it's dark and you have to get through it. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, coming back from that, it was like this whole growth period of like, oh my God, like, I think, you know, just these moments of like, I don't know, there was like certain moments where you find people that influence you at the right moment. And, you know, there's probably a handful of people that have done that. And, you know, coming back here, meeting my wife, she was another one that she would check me all the time. And like, I needed that, you know, I needed people to like come in and check me.
Call your bullshit.
Yeah. Cause otherwise, like I thought, like, I don't know, I'm just kind of chill and I'm like, I'm just kind of coasting. Mm. And, so I'm always seeking people that'll force me to grow. So that's why I too, just like you guys, I feel like this is that sort of place where you guys have challenged me, you know, to come out of my shell, and that's where we are.
I think it's one important thing to understand when it comes to growth is that growth comes from being uncomfortable. You know, growth comes from uncomfortable places. It comes from, you know, not feeling, you know, when everything's great and you're chilling and things are comfortable, there's really no reason to force yourself to grow. Growing is not, it's painful, mostly, usually, right? It feels good after you're there, but not while you're doing it. You know, like you talked about, like Justin talked about, you know, moving somewhere, not knowing anybody. And, you know, I talked about how my body kind of turned on me. And I think, you know, I guess a good lesson is, and I'm learning as I get older, that when I get real uncomfortable and when shit gets real hard, to appreciate it a little bit more, because I know that what's on the other end of that is going to be better than what was there before. So if, you know, if you're listening right now, that's the thing, I guess that would be the takeaway. Mm-hmm. Think about all the times you grew and got better. It was probably because you were kind of had to, you know what I mean? Because you were uncomfortable.
Yep.
Our next question is from JJ Wow 30. How do I recognize if I have muscle imbalances?
That's a great question, because muscle imbalances for the untrained eye can be very difficult to identify sometimes. Now, from an experience standpoint, I can identify most, you know, especially glaring muscle imbalances, and I don't even have to see you move that much. I can tell by posture. I can tell by maybe the way someone's sitting.
or the way someone's walking, you can usually see them. You know, some easy things to identify for yourself when it comes to muscle imbalances. An easy signal is pain.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's the most obvious is the aches and pains, you know?
Yeah, I mean, pain really comes in two general categories, right? You have your acute pain or pain that comes from acute causes, like I fell and, you know, hurt my arm, or I twisted my ankle a particular way and now that hurts, and that's not a muscle imbalance, although muscle imbalances can lead to acute issues. That's an actual injury. Then there's the kind of pain that tends to be chronic. Like, yeah, my shoulder just kind of always hurts, or my low back, I have issues in my low back, or my knees tend to bother me. That comes from dysfunction, joint dysfunction, which comes from muscles not working in an ideal way. And when you identify, when you look at a joint and you look at the way a joint moves, even though it looks very simple, you know, like an elbow joint or a knee joint maybe even looks simple because it flexes and extends. A knee joint is designed or evolved to utilize so much, to carry so much load and to move in a particular way. And if that knee joint is moving in a way that's not necessarily designed to move, or it's handling more of a load or more of a percentage of a load than it should, over time, that can cause problems in that particular joint. So like if I have a shoulder, if you look at my shoulder, for example, and my, let's say my shoulder blade doesn't retract and depress very well, and I'm doing overhead pressing movements and pressing movements to the front of my body, so I'm doing bench presses and shoulder presses, but my shoulder blade isn't retracting and depressing very well, I can get impingement problems, or I can get issues with my rotator muscles, my stabilizers, like my supraspinatus or my infraspinatus, because those muscles are trying to stabilize a joint, and other muscles, which are supposed to be doing lots of the stabilization, aren't doing what they're supposed to. So I have these small muscles now doing more of what they're supposed to, and that can cause pain. Posture, I would say, is probably the easiest for the layman. Like if you're not a trainer and you want to identify a muscle imbalance, and you see someone standing
look
and
at
they
some rounded shoulders,
yeah, if their shoulders are rounded, or if their shoulders tend to shrug, or their back
sticking out,
yeah, their head kind of comes forward a lot, like they're always on a computer, or their low back arches a lot, like you see the girls on Instagram posing with their butt out. I mean, someone's standing like that all the time, it's typically an imbalance, or their tailbone tucks and they've got that, like Adam says, a frog in suspenders look. That's probably a muscle imbalance. Really it's harder to recognize, because you can sometimes see someone that looks okay. I can watch them do an exercise like a row and it looks like their form is good, but then I can see that they're small, the way they move in small, very, very small ways. Like I notice a little bit of, shoulder shrug with the row. Well, that might mean that their, scapular retractors and depressors are maybe a little weak and we need to change that. An imbalance doesn't necessarily mean you're weak either. It can just mean that your recruitment pattern isn't very good, mm-hmm. or that you have a recruitment pattern that you've solidified because of, let's say you always run or you always carry a purse, and now your recruitment pattern is set in a way.
I carry a satchel. Does that count as a purse?
No. No, that's totally masculine.
Okay, good.
Keep telling them that.
Yeah, make them feel good.
It's like more like Indiana Jones, but it's kind of a purse.
You carry your whip in it.
Yeah.
Your recruitment patterns get solidified by this repetitive motion over and over again, and if that becomes your default recruitment pattern, sometimes it's not a good thing, and that can cause problems. You know what I mean? Like imagine if I, you'll see this sometimes in violin players. Violin players will pinch the violin between their neck and cheek and their shoulder, and they'll develop muscle recruitment patterns that strengthen that position. And sometimes they'll have neck issues or shoulder issues on that side. So that's kind of an extreme example, but you kind of get the point.
Well, if you think about it, most people that have like a skill type of a activity that they're doing all the time, they're going to develop an imbalance because like you just mentioned with the violin, like it's a very specific set of skills that your body's trying to make the most efficient way possible happen, and the more frequently you do that, the more your body's going to adapt to produce that movement more efficiently, and so that's going to kind of take away from the overall balance of your body in general, and you're going to see this through any type of sport or like type of position that you're fixed in constantly. It's really a battle of numbers. It's how long are you doing these very specific types of movements? Your body's going to try and organize in such a way that that's going to make everything so much more efficient doing that one thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, just, I mean, I think that's so right on. And the more that people, like, let's say you don't have anything visual and you don't have any like pain indicators, but you still could have some major imbalances, and more than likely,
well, arguably, when you get pain, it's too late.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's already been going for a very long time, and so you can just know right away if you have a profession that requires you to be in a stationary position, whether it be standing a certain way or sitting a certain way for long periods of the time, like all day long. Or even like I've had this is common, like with my teachers that like write on whiteboards like all day long, right? They're constantly lecturing and writing on whiteboards with their right hand, and they're elevated like that. So if you can look at your profession and look at what your day looks like, if you're doing something that's very repetitive, more than likely you are creating major imbalances, and whether they have caused aches and pains yet, that's I don't know, that's only you know that, like if you're not, but don't think for a second just because you don't have the aches or pains yet that they may be coming for mm-hmm. sure. You can also see, like I had a major like I used to, I remember like when I was like first getting into lifting weights, and my left pec was much bigger than the right pec. It was very obvious to me.
The left one's my favorite one, by the way.
Yeah, I would look in the in the mirror, and I could see the.
Is that why you're always pinching it?
The development was totally different, and what was happening, you know, was whenever I was doing a press. So if I would chest press, I was allowing my right shoulder to slightly roll forward, which that was very common because that's what I used to write with. So when I write on paper or drive or do anything, I have this your right arm forward. And so that would just naturally, my right shoulder would be just slightly rolled forward more than the left one. So when I would go to get into like a chest press, it was very comfortable and normal for me to retract the left shoulder, but the right one was overactive and rolled forward so much that even when I would get in a retracted position, I was a trainer, I knew good form, I still would have it with my, that recruitment pattern still wanted that shoulder to roll forward. And so even though I'm dumbbell pressing, I'm doing a lot of good movements like that where it's not just a straight barbell to where I have independent arms that are moving so they'd have to stabilize, I still would get this shoulder kind of rolling a little forward, and it would create this imbalance in my chest. So, and I've had the same issue with my back. And so now when I go to retract and do like deadlifting, and this happened to me just recently when I was chasing after Sal and his deadlifting PRs, and I was so focused on lifting heavy. And this is where I think a lot of lifters get in trouble, is if you have just the slightest little imbalance, it will be exaggerated by tenfold when you start lifting like really, really heavy weight.
Mm-hmm. This is why getting stronger isn't always great. It's not a good thing.
Yeah.
If you get stronger with an imbalance, you're only making the imbalance stronger.
Yeah, I've had more issues this last probably year or two that I've been fixing and addressing. And a lot of that is because I had all the same issues before, but they became very obvious when I started lifting really heavy. And I became so caught up in pushing the weights up and chasing PRs that all of a sudden I started getting this, you know, pain in my back. And then it radiated to my shoulder, then my elbow. And then it was just a whole mess of things. And it was all stemming from a very small imbalance that I continued to push through instead of addressing because I became so focused on the weight. So, you know, it's and to be truthful, most people have somewhat of an imbalance. It's rare. I can't remember the last time I got somebody and I assessed them and I went, hey, guess what?
Dude, you are perfect.
You're perfect. You got great posture, man. That's rare. It's very, very rare.
No, it's a game of, you know, identifying the imbalances before they become too big and addressing them. And constantly, if you train people for long periods of time, that's what your job is. Initially, it becomes get this person to move, get them a little stronger. But then after a year or two, it's about identifying imbalances before they become problems, correcting them, and adjusting the workouts accordingly. But imbalances are, I mean, I just thought of one, like, I would get women that would come hire me after they just had their baby. So they'd be, you know, the baby would be like 6 months old or whatever. And they're like, okay, now I'm motivated to come work out. and I'd see an imbalance from right to left with their QL and because when they'd hold their baby, they'd push their hip out, and they'd always hold the baby on one side, and you'd see that, and it was clear to me they couldn't see it, but I could see it, and I knew that would turn into hip problem, especially in the SI joint, would cause problems for them. I mean, pay attention to the small signals, like, do you always cross your legs the same way? Mm-hmm. Like, is it always right over left? Try left over right. Does that feel weird and tight? If it does, you have an imbalance. And what you should probably do is start sitting with your left leg crossed. You know, I mean, I noticed that myself. Like, when I lay down flat on the floor and I put my legs out, my right foot wants to turn out more than my left.
Yeah.
And why? Because I tend to cross right over left like I'm doing right now.
Mm-hmm.
So these are all little things that you
can
identify.
Sides that you roll on when you sleep. Like, if you have a side that you always roll onto versus the other, or if you have
that
an arm.
That impacted my shoulder quite a bit.
If you have an arm that you put up above and the other one you don't. Like, these are all little, I mean, even
externally rotated. Rotated feet, you know, just like noticing that as you're sitting or you're standing or whatever, and just like, you know, going in.
You know, mine, and it was Dr. Brink who pointed this out. I had a slight pronation in my right ankle, just the slightest little pronation. And that has caused knee issues. It's called hip. It's caused hip issues, and it's caused back issues. So it literally was stemming all the way down to my ankle, and I had this slight little deviation that I wasn't addressing. I was continuing to lift. I was pushing through that, and then all these other issues were starting to radiate from that. Another obvious one is your mechanics. So if you're doing a movement, and when you go to do a movement, and like, let's say you have maps and you have the videos of us demoing things, and it doesn't look the same when you do it, like, that's a pretty obvious. Like, if you go to do a barbell press, and when you finish the press, one side, the bar is unlevel, you know, or you're doing movements, and the one dumbbell's way more forward than the other, or elevated an inch more than the other one. All these, like, if you mechanically are off on your movements, that's a pretty obvious one too, which, you know, that's probably the first place I tell someone to look, is like, you know, start paying attention to your form. And if you struggle having, like,
that's a good point. That's kind of easy.
Right. It's like, right away, like, you know, start assessing all of your exercises right now and pay attention to, you know, when you do the mechanics, when you do the exercise, can you keep extremely strict form? And if you struggle to keep very strict form, there's probably an imbalance that's related to that.
Not only that, but you know, immerse yourself in different types of movements. So, like, understand what your capabilities are too. So, like, you're not really going to understand that you have an imbalance till, say, like, I never reach back, and now I start to reach back, and oh my God, I can't. You know,
this is why I love the Turkish get up. You want to move. That will just, like, point out.
It'll highlight most things.
Exactly. Oh. It's totally like
it's
that.
It's from head to toe. Like, that's why I love that.
Everything
move.
Has to work.
Yeah. You want to point out, you want to see some, which why I think a lot of people ignore it and they don't do it. They just, they're not good at it, or they suck at it, so they just negate it. No,
that's why you should do it.
Yeah, it's an excellent, between the Turkish get up and probably a squat, in my opinion, are two of the best movements somebody can do to assess, which that's why we have a squat assessment. I mean, the squat assessment, I don't even remember how long it's been around. It's probably been around for about 10 years or
Well, I remember
years.
When I first started trying to do a windmill with the kettlebell, I could not, what was it, 3 months ago, maybe 4 months ago, I could not get into a windmill with no weight. Yeah. I couldn't twist and bend
now
at the same time.
Your hand, your palm is touching the ground.
I did it. Now I can do a windmill. I can do a windmill with an 80-pound kettlebell, and I did one the other day with, I think, a 40-pound kettlebell, where I actually brought my palm all the way down on the floor. And that's just the movement. It was weird. Like, when we first started talking about windmills, and I knew how important they were, and I went to go try, and I couldn't fucking do it at all.
Yeah.
It was eye-opening.
That's awesome.
For me.
Well, because what got me into them was because I had hurt my QL, and so that was one of those things where it was like, shit, you know, I already felt my body compensating for that, and I had this, like, very glaring imbalance, and I'm like, well, that was one of those moves that really challenged me.
You need to
I had to, like, incrementally work my way through it.
And you need to know that, you have to understand, we say this all the time, but really, I mean, your body is an adaptation machine. It will mold itself and adapt itself to your environment as well as it can. In fact, when scientists go and dig up old bones from, longbowmen, from the Middle Ages, these were soldiers that were experts at pulling these incredibly, powerful longbows, which is one of the reasons why England had dominance
militarily at that time, because these guys were able to shoot so far with this very powerful bow. They can tell you which one are longbowmen because the spine is twisted and formed in the direction of where they would pull. And their right arm, or whichever arm they used to pull, was the bone was strong. Noticeably thicker and more dense. And they had these twisted, almost scoliosis-type backs because they had been trained since they were children to pull on these heavy bows. And their bodies just adapted to what they did. And I'm sure they were very good at what they did. But they also, I'm sure, they had lots of pain and problems in everyday life. But your body will mold itself. You know, in fact, when they find, when you have people who've been really, really obese for long periods of time, their lower body bone density is always very high because they're carrying this heavy load all the time. And anecdotally, you'll see people who lose lots of weight after being very, very overweight, and you'll see them still have very thick.
So you're saying lower... they didn't start out big boned?
No.
It's like that excuse it's I was hearing.
Yeah.
I'm big boned, man.
But the body does that. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Brenda Farias, 51. Do you think nootropic infused coffee will be mainstream at Starbucks and Pete's and that type of place?
I totally disagree. Yeah, I 100% say yes, and here's why.
I think in the Silicon Valley, it's got a chance.
I'll tell you why, because we've gradually seen coffee morph, and actually it's happened over a rather quick period of time, because when I was a kid, okay. It wasn't that long ago. It sounds
just
like
Folgers, bro.
It was just
Folgers back then.
When I was a kid, coffee was coffee. That's it. You went to fucking McDonald's, got your coffee.
Yeah, at the same time they're smoking cigarettes.
Starbucks CEO stepped down.
Yes.
Crazy.
Yeah, I texted you guys that. Yeah,
it's crazy.
Well, he stepped down to because
Howard Schultz, right?
Howard Schultz.
Yeah.
And what's interesting about that is, like, I really respect the guy because he's going back to the roots of, like, you know, how do we improve? How do we maintain being the standard? You know, like, they created this entire ecosystem.
Oh, they created a market. Yeah. They created a market for sure.
Well, he,
he's the Steve Jobs of coffee.
Well,
right?
Okay. So when Starbucks came out and came to America, people were paying 50 cents for a cup of coffee, and it was very, like, just give me my fucking coffee, and I'm out of here. He comes, and he introduces something and starts saying,
not husky voices.
We're going to charge, like, $4 for a cup of coffee. Like, that was a crazy, crazy thing to do, but now...
I love that, too.
But now people spend hundreds of dollars of coffee every single month. Yeah. They buy their gourmet coffees. They like different flavors. Of course, this has been going on in Europe for a long time. Italy had been doing this for a long time, so that's where he had identified this. Coffee has become such a huge market in America and a niche market where you've got all these kind of enthusiasts. Now you're seeing places blend coffee with butter and coconut oil. Whole Foods does it, in fact. Starbucks is starting to do they have a cold brew is now everywhere. Starbucks is infusing coffee now with nitrogen, so they're doing nitro coffee. It is a matter of time before nootropics, and this is why I think now I'm going to speak.
And yet they still have milkshakes.
Well, I'm going to speak a little bit about our sponsors because they're really the only coffee I know of, or at least one of the bigger brands that infuses in nootropics and coffee.
Yeah, I don't know anybody.
Yeah,
else.
I don't know anybody else.
Especially all natural. You
we
know,
don't care about them anyway.
No, and I can see other places doing this because you do notice a difference, especially if you're the kind of person that is can be sensitive to caffeine or kind of gets a crash from coffee after the effect wears off, or you know you're really sensitive to your body and you like to feel the effects of coffee, but sometimes you get agitated or a little anxious from it. The nootropics in Chimera, for example, like the theanine, for example, amino acid that gives you this calm focus. You combine it with caffeine and you get this smooth kind of energy buzz. I used to, before we were introduced to Chimera, I used to take theanine pills with coffee because it would give me this smoother, more focused kind of buzz. And that's the thing about central nervous system stimulants. There's a good effect, and then there can be too much. Like if you get overstimulated, and I think everybody's experienced that, right, where you had too much coffee, you become less productive. It's like you're jittery. You can't really focus. So this is kind of nice medium where you want to be. And theanine helped do that. And then you have the DMAE in there, the alpha GPC. These are, you know, choline, you know, based molecules that I know in Europe, for example, alpha GPC is prescribed to people with Alzheimer's because it improves their cognition. And in regular people, it improves the membrane of certain, you know, cells in the brain. So it makes it's good for your brain. And when I combine nootropics with caffeine, I get a different high. It's longer lasting. I don't crash. I don't get the agitation from it.
That's the best part about it for sure.
Right. And I think because people have now demonstrated that they're willing to spend more money for coffee, because you can go get a fucking Frappuccino for $5 now because of flavor or because of effects or whatever. I 100% think there's going to be, I don't think it'll be the main market. I don't think anything's going to ever replace your good old fashioned drip coffee.
Yeah.
But I definitely think there's a niche market, and there's enough of a market for, I think the main players are going to start doing that.
Right. Well, I think it's a lot like I think it's a lot like the fitness industry. We see how like it's all sort of, instead of the big huge box gym, like it's evolving into a lot of these little like specialized type facilities and studios. And you know, I feel like that's a lot of the reason why the CEO stepped down from Starbucks, because, you know, he wanted to get back into the research of like, you know, what will help, you know, optimize health. You know, how are ways that we can use coffee to, you know, be more than just a stimulant, or, you know, more than just something tasty. And, you know, he's really going back into the roots and the research of it, because there's a lot of these, you know, smaller companies that are branching out that are, you know, realizing the health benefits to it. And then also like different ways to combine things with them. And I think it's going to be interesting to see what direction, you know, coffee is going to take with all these little micro breweries all over the place.
I think some of the best thing to happen to coffee were the rather recent studies that came out to show the health benefits of coffee. Coffee, now, for those of you who have a really poor intolerance to caffeine, you know who you are. If you drink caffeine, and you probably avoid it because it gives you heart palpitations and all these other things, this isn't for you. Or maybe you drink decaf, because decaf has its own health benefits. But for those of you that can tolerate caffeine, the studies on coffee is incredible, man. The anti-cancer effects for the liver, for the skin, the antioxidant effects for the body, the brain boosting and protecting effects, the neuroprotective effects of coffee. And the studies show the more you drink, the better, especially for people who have a good tolerance for it. So that's some of the best news to ever come out, because for a while there, they were doing studies to show, and there were studies that showed coffee was bad for you, and that's because they never separated the fact that people who drink coffee also smoke cigarettes, and they didn't separate those two. Mm-hmm. But now that they've separated them, like, coffee's a health food, which is fucking awesome. You got guys like Dave Asprey promoting his bulletproof coffee and all that stuff for health, and then the fasting movement, you know, incorporating coffee. That's the best thing to ever happen, I think, to coffee.
Well, I feel like this question would have been so much better. Ask me the same question in about 2 weeks. And the reason why I say that is we're right in the middle of brewing all this. And so the reason why I disagreed with you at first, and you're slowly selling me on it right now, is I right away I was seeing the dollar amount. And nootropics are the most expensive part of Chimera. The reason why it's a more expensive coffee is the nootropics, which, you know, if there's anybody that ever goes on to go look at it, they're like, oh my God, it's so expensive. And they're comparing it to regular coffee. Well, yeah, it's going to seem really expensive if you compare it to a normal bag of coffee. But the expensive part is the nootropics. If you go buy a bottle of nootropics by themselves, you're going to spend anywhere from $25 to $50 a bottle by itself. So that's where the real money is at. So I'm interested to see when we make this batch. So
when we cold brew and nitro it.
Yeah, when we cold brew it, we nitro, and I can look at what it costs us to do that. And what we'd have to sell it at for there to be the right margins to make it feasible, then I think I could answer this question even better. Because that's the only thing that I would say, like, well, you know, if it drives a cup of coffee up to $7, I don't see people paying that much money.
It depends on the motivation. Like, I drink coffee. I don't really drink coffee because I enjoy. I do like to taste the coffee, but that's not why I'm drinking it. I actually, to be clear, I don't drink anything for the taste. I'm not a drink. You know, I don't think about like, ooh, let me get this bottle of wine, or let me drink this, you know, the soda. Or
yes, we've covered it. You're weird.
No, I just don't. I drink water. Like, if I'm going to drink something, it's water. If I want something for taste, it's food. And so I'm just not one of those people. I drink coffee.
I don't even know if you eat that way. I think I disagree.
Oh no, I do.
I think you eat for. I think you eat for the performance.
Function.
Yeah.
Oh no, I love. Don't get me wrong. I love the
sardines and fucking.
Listen, you know what?
Yolks,
you talk shit about that. But
sounds so fantastic.
Since I talked about sardines, we've had so many people on the forum try them and say that they like the taste. Sardines aren't anchovies. They taste different. They're good.
Hey, just because it's the majority does not necessarily mean it's right. Because sometimes the majority just means all the fools are on the same side.
Oh yeah.
That's all that means. Yeah. So
All you fools eating sardines.
I wouldn't say it's the majority.
Let's see. Sardines taste delicious.
Anytime Sal does anything, there's always a wave of a bunch of people right afterwards that do it. We know that.
Someone's resentful.
Sal evangelists.
Somebody's resentful.
No,
here's the thing. I drink coffee.
I'm just trying to keep you honest. Like, you tell everybody that you eat it for taste. I'm like, oh.
I fucking love the taste of sardines. It's a true story.
All right.
I do, dude. I drink coffee for the effects. I like the high. I like the caffeine high from coffee. I like the nootropic effects of coffee, of just caffeine. I love the effects of coffee with nootropics in it, like the DMAE, the alpha GPC, the theanine, the taurine, because it's a better high. I take it because it boosts my motivation. It gives me a good workout. It's the best pre-workout I've ever used.
It's like high octane coffee that way.
That's it. Yeah. So if you're taking it for nootropic effects, if you're taking it because you like the high, if you're taking it as a pre-workout, if you're taking it for effects other than just the taste and a little bit of caffeine, then I think people will spend the money, just like they do on supplements and other shit that, you know, that sometimes does nothing for them. If you're doing it just for the taste and just because you love coffee, well, yeah, there's no value in it for you. You know what I'm saying? You just want coffee. You like the taste of coffee. You could give a shit about the effects. Then who cares?
You should explain the compounding effect that happens too with that, because that's another thing people don't realize, that, you know, the more you drink, the more that starts.
Yeah. Since we got sponsored through Chimera, before we got sponsored through Chimera, I was drinking it consistently for about a month or 2 months because I wanted to test it. I don't want to support anything I don't like. And I really liked the effects, especially after using it for about 2 or 3 weeks. I'm like, man, I feel smooth. I feel good. It's right around this point that normal coffee, I'd have to stop drinking it because it would give me negative effects. But this doesn't seem to be doing that. Then we got sponsored, whatever. Then I stopped drinking it for a while because I had run out and I wanted to order it and I had forgot or whatever. That's when I noticed a difference, because then I started drinking espresso and I started noticing some of the negatives that I used to get from regular coffee. So that's when I started noticing, when I stopped drinking it and drank something else, then I could tell the big difference. And now I'm drinking it more regularly. So, but yeah, I drink it for the high, man. I like the way I feel when I drink it. And I work out in the morning. So I drink it before my workout, 30 minutes before. Yep. Do my workout.
Yeah, most people that are big fans of Chimera coffee, they're interested in the nootropics. Mm-hmm. You know, very very few people.
They like the high of it.
Yeah, they notice, and I think that's the number one thing that I get when people give me feedback is, man, I don't feel like I crash. I don't feel like I crash after. I get the energy from it. It feels clean. It feels pure. And then I don't feel like I have this dip. I feel good all day long.
Exactly. So, and by the way, you can get a discount on Chimera. I'm just going to do the plug here. If you go on their site, order it, and then use the coupon code MINDPUMP, you'll get a discount. Also, if you like MINDPUMP, leave us a 5-star rating review on iTunes. If we like your review and we pick it, we'll give you a free MINDPUMP t-shirt. Also, don't forget to check us out on Instagram at MINDPUMPRadio. You can find me at Mind Pump Sal. Adam can be found at Mind Pump Adam. And Justin is at Mind Pump Justin.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. If your goal is to build and shape your body, dramatically improve your health and energy, and maximize your overall performance, check out our discounted RGB Super Bundle at mindpumpmedia.com. The RGB Super Bundle includes MAPS Anabolic, MAPS Performance, and MAPS Aesthetic. 9 months of phased expert exercise programming designed by Sal, Adam, and Justin to systematically transform the way your body looks, feels, and performs. With detailed workout blueprints and over 200 videos, the RGB Super Bundle is like having Sal, Adam, and Justin as your own personal trainers, but at a fraction of the price. The RGB Super Bundle has a full 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can get it now, plus other valuable free resources at mindpumpmedia.com. If you enjoy this show, please share the love by leaving us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes and by introducing Mind Pump to your friends and family. We thank you for your support, and until next time, this is Mind Pump.